find out if that common health claim is fact or fiction. I'm Dr. Mark Ferris, a health psychologist and exercise physiologist, and we pit the mythical claims against the scientific evidence in Health Hullabaloo on Texas A&M Health Talk. Well, welcome to Health Hullabaloo. I'm here with Tim Schnettler. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Dr. Ferris, how are you?
Good. Again, my name is Dr. Mark Ferris, and we are trying to find some clarity in the commotion and confusion related to health and fitness, medical-type myths. Hullabaloo, Tim, do you know it means noisy uproar?
Yes, sir.
We see that, right? We see stuff on the internet. We read things. We hear things. It's good one day. It's bad the other. It doesn't cause cancer, and then one day it does cause cancer. And so we really want to focus on trying to, again, dispel some of these myths or determine if it's a myth at all. Sometimes we think it's a myth and it's not. So the one today is, can you be fat but fit? You've heard this before?
I've heard this before, and as a former fat kid, I'm really interested in this topic.
All right. Well, and there's some other folks that we just talked to that are interested as well. It's interesting for numerous reasons, I think. One, I think, because weight loss is so hard for some people, and the idea that, oh, wait, I could be fit and not have to lose weight, it's almost like a relief at times. But also because of that difficulty, it's bothersome, because then you're saying that maybe it removes any of the health risk from being overweight or having excess fat, which I think can be somewhat dangerous. Now, there is confusion even on this topic to some degree at the academic researcher, expert, quote-unquote, level. And so that bleeds down to all of us as well. Where did this all get started? There was, I guess, 3 decades ago now, the Aerobic Center Longitudinal Study, Cooper Clinic in Dallas, did a study where they followed over 10,000 men and over 3,000 women, and they were followed for 8 years. And so the better cardiorespiratory fitness, right, so that's the fitness part that we'll talk about in just a second, that was associated with a decreased risk of what they call all-cause mortality, so dying from anything within that 8-year span. So again, what they're referring to, they're calling cardiorespiratory fitness or aerobic fitness. It's the ability of our lungs, so to speak, to pull in air, grab the oxygen out of that air, get it into the blood, and then get it to the muscle. That muscle then can get the oxygen from the blood into itself and then use it for whatever reasons that it needs, usually to actually function and do aerobic-based activities. So the idea is a more fit person will breathe in likely more air, but specifically get more oxygen from the air into the lungs, into the blood, and then subsequently into the muscle than an unfit. So what they do is they put people on a treadmill, and it's a graded exercise test where every few minutes, have you done this?
I've done one. I actually did a study with the health and kinesiology department here where they put us on treadmills and raised it and as we went along.
That's it. So there's different protocols, and every 3 minutes, and you go until what?
Until you can't do it anymore.
Yeah. You go until you just can't go. And so it's an odd test, but what that's getting is what's called max VO2, volume of oxygen. So they're looking at, as you do that, they're measuring the oxygen that you breathe in and the oxygen that you breathe out. The difference between those two things represents the amount of oxygen that you kept in your body. So if you and I both breathe in at that point where we bonk, at the end, we're both breathing in, let's say, 100 milliliters of oxygen, mm-hmm. and I breathe out 80. I only kept 20.
Right.
But if you breathe in 100 and breathe out 20, you kept in 80 milliliters of oxygen. Thus, you would be more fit, or classified as more fit.
Right.
Okay. So that's what they did in this study, is they brought everybody in. These thousands and thousands of people did that test and then looked at their risk over time. Largely what they found was the higher your cardiorespiratory fitness as measured by this test, the lower the risk, again, of dying prematurely within that 8 years from any cause, including cardiovascular disease. Now, the interesting thing was that related to this fat versus fit idea is that they found the reduction in risk despite the person's body mass index or their weight. If you've heard BMI, we hear that. And that's really the fat component of this potential myth. Right. Body mass index is a measure of how much you weigh for your height. And we were talking about this a little bit before we got started. I remember years ago when Nintendo Wii came out. Mm-hmm. Did y'all play that?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I was at my brother's, and I had not done like the fitness game that came with it, or right. you could buy with mm-hmm. it. So you have to establish your little Wii character. Remember that?
I remember this.
Yeah, you yes. put hair on it or no hair or whatever, and you do it. And I had to put in my height and weight. And as we were talking earlier, I'm technically, by BMI, I'm overweight category. And so I put in my height, weight, and my little Wii character got like this belly.
Yeah.
And he got like this little sad face. Well, my sister-in-law saw it, and she's like, what happened? And I was able to explain to her that what's looking at my height and weight, it doesn't know where the weight's coming
right,
from.
Right.
It just knows that for my height, right, my weight, I'm classified as overweight. So that's the way this works. It's your weight divided by your height squared. It's kilograms per meter square is most common. You can go online and find a calculator. All you do is you enter in your weight, enter in your height, and it will spit out a number.
Right.
So generally speaking, the categories are this. If your BMI comes back as 18.5 to 24.9, you're considered normal weight. If it comes back from 25 to 29.9, you're considered or classified as overweight. And then 30 or above is the common classification for obese. It's a long story where that came about, which is sort of interesting. But right now we find that as people fall into those three classifications, so if I go from normal weight to overweight to obese, my risk of chronic disease, disability, arthritis, orthopedic issues, mental issues increases as well. And we've known that for a long, long time. And actually, as it relates to cardiovascular disease, we know cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in the U.S. by the CDC. And in 2015, it accounted for, it says here, 23% of all deaths. But obesity is its own risk factor for cardiovascular disease as well. And actually, for all chronic disease, obesity is listed here. And almost 40% of the U.S. adults are considered obese right now. That equates to annual healthcare costs for obesity-related health issues from $147 to $220 billion for just obesity.
Right.
Now, because BMI is just, as we said, weight to height, we don't really know where that comes from. So when you hear BMI, the real concern is how much of your weight comes from fat. The concern is not so much how much it comes from muscle, right? You have athletes who are probably fit cardiovascularly that end up having a little more weight from muscle, thus their BMI might be higher.
Right.
Here's the thing though, at the population level, like if you look at all Americans, why is their weight increasing? Is it from muscle or is it from fat? So the conclusion we find that it's, again, most people, the way they eat the way we do and they're inactive the way we are in the U.S., their weight increases from fat. That's why their health risk increases, their mortality risk increases, their disease risk increases. But if everybody was getting heavier from lifting so many weights, you know, and getting jacked and doing all, then we wouldn't have the health issues that we have. But here's the problem, right? If you, like we just talked about with the Nintendo Wii, if you apply BMI to an individual, it may or may not work. But at a population level, it tends to work pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And some people dismiss BMI because of that issue. Well, yeah, I'm big bone, right? Or I got a bunch of muscle for my weight. And that might be true. But again, it's not another reason to dismiss it.
Well, and to me, I mean, BMI is a scary thing. When you go in to a doctor and he tells you your BMI is this, you're obese or you're morbidly obese. Yeah. I mean, that's a scary thing to hear.
It is. And there's stigma involved with that. And there's, it's even avoided by healthcare practitioners. I don't want to tell somebody that they're... And we're even moving away from saying you're obese. We're trying to say, look, you're classified as obese. You're classified as overweight. And so that's the medical stigma. We identify these areas. The social stigma that comes with it is where we really don't like. And so you have even healthcare providers who unknowingly sometimes make some subconscious decisions that, oh, because they're classified as obese, now subsequently they're lazy or they don't know what they're doing or... And that may not be true at all. So you're exactly right. It's not only scary for the patient, it's scary and risky for the healthcare practitioner as well.
Well, I remember as a young kid, as I said, I was overweight. And I remember going to my doctor, my family doctor, and he basically read me the riot act. And I mean, he shamed me basically.
Yeah,
So, you know, growing up that way, I was always scared of it. And you get that feeling that I don't want to go to the doctor because he's going to get after me.
Yeah. And it is a common source of healthcare avoidance. And generally speaking, this is interesting because anytime we have to engage thoughts about ourselves, especially negative thoughts, we really don't like that.
Right.
We don't like hearing where we fall short. We don't like hearing where we're not matching up to a standard or where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so experiential avoidance or avoidance of this information is really, really common across the board. That's why people don't get cancer screenings a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to know that I have cancer.
Right.
Or I don't want to know I have this. Or I don't want to send that email. I don't want to talk to this person. Or the same thing as I don't even want to know what my weight is. Especially if the fitness instructor, the trainer, or the healthcare practitioner is like, you know, Mrs. Smith, you need to go lose that weight. And then they don't want to come back and hear
right.
it again. But at the same time, it's like, you don't want to shame, but you don't want to not talk about it either. It's like, we can't
right.
not tell people where their issues are. It's just getting better and better and more tactful
mm-hmm.
and proper in sharing this sort of information. Mm-hmm. But yeah, times have changed, right, on how we do present that and
right.
should present that information.
Yeah,
because the goal is to look at and let people know that there is a risk of increased mm-hmm. fat, especially where we store it. And so that's another limitation of BMI, and a potential limitation with this fat but fit potential myth is that where we store the fat on our bodies makes a difference as to the risk of health or disease or premature death. And so if I store fat, let's say under the skin, we call that subcutaneous fat.
Mm-hmm.
Subcutaneous fat doesn't have near the risk for disease or premature mortality, premature death, dying before our time, than what we call visceral fat. And that's the fat that is stored inside, mainly the torso, around the organs, around the heart. And we hear about android obesity. If you've heard that is the obesity in the gut area, the apple shaped.
The spare tire.
keg, whatever names come up to describe the fat stored in the gut. Now, generally speaking, men are more prone to get that.
Right.
That's actually why our sort of cutoffs for body fat are lower for men than women, because generally speaking, this is not everybody, but generally speaking, women tend to store more fat in the buttocks, hips, thigh, leg region. That doesn't really increase risk
right.
of disease or heart rate. And actually, there's some evidence to show, especially the omega-3 fatty acids that can be stored in that area for women, are beneficial for the offspring's cognitive ability and some other health benefits that naturally occur there. Again, don't come from the Twinkies, but come from natural storage processes. But the idea is that we do store it, and that's gynoid storage. And so if we look at the apple pear shape, we are more concerned with the apple android spare tire type story. And that's why we see also that waist circumference is so great at
right.
predicting risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's something you can do to look at your risk, grab the tape and wrap it around. I did see one thing, I need to look back at it, but they measured height
mm-hmm.
and then did around the belly button and did a ratio, which shows to be predicting risk pretty well too. I'll have to look that up. But again, the idea is, why does that work? It's because of the fat that's stored there.
Right.
So again, it's not just about weight, it's where it comes from and the fat. There was one study that I know of that looked at risk of dying with cardiorespiratory fitness and total body fat percent, and they still found the same thing. In other words, even if you were a higher body fat percentage, not real high, but high, and you had good cardiorespiratory fitness, your risk was still low, just like you were normal weight, but had high cardiorespiratory fitness. Any questions, Tim, you can think of at this point?
Not at this point. I think we're good. Let's keep going. This is very interesting and a lot to digest.
It is.
So we've heard about, you've talked about, can you be overweight and healthy? What about someone who is skinny fat? I mean, is there such a thing as skinny fat?
Yeah, you know, years ago, the skinny fat... or fat but skinny. Somebody told me a word, finny. I don't know if that's still around, but that was the idea. And actually, when I was in graduate school, in one of my nutrition classes, we had to do a project. And I was teaching a weight training class at that time as a part of my graduate assistantship. And there were several girls, women, undergraduate students in that class that were always complaining about body image. And they were there to lift weights. They didn't want to lift weights. They did a lot of aerobic exercise. They ate very little. But the reason they were complaining about their body image, at least for them, was because they were, you know, mushy, or they were skinny, but they were fat, whatever their concern was.
Right.
And so I actually did a project on them where I brought them in and put them on the, what we call the DEXA scanner, where you get total body fat percentage. It's the most accurate way to get that. Right. It gives you amount of muscle, total pounds of muscle, total pounds of fat. So I brought them into the lab and we scanned them. And we found that, I found that most of them, by body fat percentage, were overweight or even obese. Now I'm talking 5, 2, 3, 4, you know, 100, low 100s, right? So they looked fine, so to speak, but by body fat percentage level, they were overweight or obese classification. We see this in Asian populations as well, who tend to be smaller, but their body fat percentage is higher. Subsequently, their risk is higher. And so that's the great thing about this fat versus fit idea, is that it's not just talking about you can be fat but fit, but it's also telling us that, look, you can be unfat. Is that a word? Did I invent that? Unfat and unfit. Or you can be unfit and like, so it's like, you, right. Yes, you can be normal weight,
but still be considered fat.
Skinny fat.
Yeah.
And you can be normal weight and unfit and still have increased risk, right? So if you're fit and overweight, that's probably better than if you're normal weight and really unfit.
Right.
So it gets to this point to where excess body fat, especially stored in particular areas around the organs, obesity, as we would call that. By the way, obesity, when we hear that, it's really referring to an excess storage of fat to the point that our health is adversely affected. So just because somebody is overweight or even their body fat doesn't mean they're technically obese, okay. Right? It does have this indication that health is adversely affected. And sometimes we lose that because we see things all the time about somebody's overweight or obese, and we try to look at people and determine their health status. It's, you just can't do that.
Right.
So that, though, that excess storage in fat in particular areas of the body around the organs does increase risk, and it's an independent risk factor. So we can't dismiss that. So this idea that I'm going to focus on fitness and not worry about how much fat I get, and I'm going to eat whatever I want. Diet, technically, in the largest cross-sectional study to date, that just came out again, there was a 2014 pub and a 2018 publication, dietary risk are the number one risk factor for premature death in the U.S., accounting for, in this study, the large study, about 25% of all deaths. And so we can't just dismiss diet. We can't dismiss the burden that excess fat and weight can put on us, not only cardiovascular risk-wise, but potentially risk of cancer, orthopedic issues, arthritis, gout, et cetera. But fitness, cardiorespiratory fitness in particular, this aerobic fitness, is also an independent risk factor. So where's the benefit? Well, let's say I'm a little overweight or even classified as obese. Isn't that wonderful? I can start being active. I can get out and I can start walking. I can choose any activity I want that gets my heart rate up, start working that cardiovascular system, and start getting reduction in risk. Because one thing we didn't get to talk about in this early aerobic center longitudinal study, the big thing to me too was that they found that if you go from really low fitness based on their classifications to even a moderate level of fitness, your risk goes down. And you don't really get that much more risk reduction if you're really, really fit, right? So in other words, you don't have to run marathons and do this extreme level of fitness to get the health benefits, to get the reduction in risk benefits from, again, dying from all causes or dying from cardiovascular disease. That's why we hear our recommendations currently are 30 minutes a day,
right,
5 days a week, or 150 minutes of a moderate intensity aerobic activity. There is online, you can go search for the compendium of physical activities, and you can search that, find it. There'll be a section, and you look at the different categories. It is based on these activities are divided up by what's called a MET value, a metabolic equivalent of a task. All you need to know is that a moderate intensity activity is anywhere from 3 to 6 METs. If you go above 6 METs, it's called vigorous.
Right.
But at least moderate. In other words, you can go and look on that compendium, and there's hundreds of activities that fall between 3 and 6 METs. I can do any of those for my 30 minutes daily. I can do them all in one day. I can do one day and change it up the next day. I can garden this day. I can do a brisk walk. And that would be an example of a moderate intensity, something like a brisk walk where you can actually feel your heart rate getting up.
Right.
And you do that continuously, at least for 10 minutes at a time. So if we walk into work, 15 minutes, get a brisk pace in, and then I walk back from work or to the car or whatever and get 15 minutes. There's a whole nother topic we can do on what's called non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which is all about the non-activity that we do and the benefits of that. In other words, not sitting, which we will likely have public health recommendations for in the coming years. You got to be this active and you only can sit this much.
Right.
But again, what a great benefit for those who are at an increased risk because of excess body fat, but they can start getting their aerobic fitness up because based on this data, it's probably a stronger predictor of risk than the weight anyway. But the conclusion is that we don't want to forget about obesity and just focus on fitness. But we don't want to forget about fitness thinking that weight loss alone is going to reduce our risk either, because as we talked before, there's numerous ways to lose weight that don't include exercise, that don't include healthy eating. They can, but they don't have to. There's drugs, supplements, surgeries, fad diets that actually could be increasing risk of disease, risk of premature death, and other risks. So really the idea is, you can be fat or fit, but fit, yes, but let's focus on both and try to improve both.
Very interesting. Thank you very much, Dr. Ferris.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you, Tim. Until next time, I hope that does clarify for everybody this question, can you be fat but fit? And again, thank you for joining us with this episode of Health Hullabaloo. Again, I'm Dr. Mark Ferris, here with Tim Schnettler.
Thank you for joining us on Texas A&M Health Talk, a production of the Texas A&M University Health Science Center. Visit us on the web at vitalrecord.tamhsc.edu, where you'll find answers to all of your health questions. Until next time, stay healthy.